Before cities and electric light, we had the true dark and stars for light, and all the monsters of the night. Before the World Wide Web, there was the World Tree, connecting the nine realms, and our ancestors, living in the realm of Midgard, spoke daily with spirits, bartered with elves, and avoided the trails where trolls would tread. Through the rational lens of the present day, we call them fairy tales. They simply called them huldufolk, the hidden people. Could encounters with the unexplained many experience today simply be glimpses of this other realm? Our mysterious hidden neighbors from times long past, peeking through occasionally into our noisy modern world when there's a quiet moment or a creak of the closet door. Just to remind us, they're still there, watching, unseen, in the dark.
Conspiracy.
Synchronicity.
Sasquatch.
Homunculus.
Alien races.
Satanism in Hollywood.
MK Ultra.
Tartaria.
There's like a whole... I've been watching this one guy.
Close the door, Ed.
Jury! Close your door!
What's the,
Inner Earth.
Disagreements.
Ghost Dad!
I like that movie.
Dogman.
Bohemian Growing.
Felt.
Magicians are demons.
Specters.
Spirit summonings.
Paralysis.
Strange disappearances.
Sky whale phenomenon.
Yes!
Alternative history.
Shadow people.
Shh, quiet! I'm trying to say words with the mouth.
It's getting dicey out there.
Poltergeists.
That's cool.
Anunnaki.
What is the moon?
Elf towers.
I would never talk about it. That's old.
Y2K.
Cover-ups.
Apocalyptic catastrophe.
Vampire.
Hi.
Well, hello, hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Oh, go ahead.
My name is John. Wait, let me try that again.
Why do you welcome everybody first and then say your name?
I thought you said welcome.
You said hello.
What's the difference?
Welcome to Belief Hole.
Yes!
My name is John.
I'm Chris. And I'm Jeremy. We are the brothers of the Belief Hole. The Belief Hole right here in Midgard. Good Nordic reference for today's topic, ladies and gentlemen. Today I'm excited because, well, a lot of you listeners, I'm always excited.
You need another word.
Today I am nervous.
Today I am nervous.
About presenting this amazing information.
There's got to be another synonym for excited.
Today I'm crackling with energy because today we are going to be reaching deep into our history. Now, a lot of you listeners out there might know we were raised Christian. Right? Yeah. But our ancestors were Viking. Maybe.
Is that a religion?
Yeah, I don't know why you're bringing that up.
Oh, okay. Starting off with a bang here.
I like where your head's at, though.
Our mother's parents were first generation Norwegian.
Right.
100%. Yeah. We don't know if we're related directly to Vikings, but we are very... I feel like it's in our bones, right?
I can feel it.
The point is, we're going to be talking today about the invisible world, the hidden world. There's a lot of people out there that have specific ideas about religion, opinions, and ideas, but we are going to be talking about a people and a time and a belief system of the Old Norse.
Yeah, the mind of the Viking, the Old Norse, the world of the Norse.
And this goes to what we talk about a lot on the show, that idea of the hidden world that runs parallel to us alongside our visible material reality. The ancient Norse people believed in a next-door neighbor of sorts, a world that lived alongside ours, that they were intimately connected to, the invisible world.
The invisible people.
Of the hidden ones. And this could even explain a lot of phenomena we talk about on the show, which is why I think it's such an interesting topic to dive into.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've had that awesome gnome episode in the past. We've had fairy episodes. It all kind of relates. And depending on where you are in the world, you might refer to these things with different names, but it all comes back to the invisible things that live alongside us that people have strange encounters with. This episode, we will be doing some pretty awesome stories.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into the magic and the lore of the Viking mind, the Viking world, and then we're going to get into some accounts at the end of the episode.
Right.
Or I should say second half of the episode.
And it's not just Viking, right? Viking is a specific group in time, but a lot of these ideas may have existed pre-Viking, Old Norse ideas going back, influences from all over. The difficulty, of course, is where does the information come from? How are these belief systems created? We can't know all of that. And there's reasons for that, which we'll touch on. But there is obviously a shared folklore, a belief system that encompasses a lot of these now familiar to us entities and phenomena that we'll be getting into, whether it's elves or gnomes, trolls, Nisa, all kinds of stuff we're going to be getting into. Even the idea of missing people, people going missing in the wilderness. John, have you heard of the phrase bergtaking?
Yeah, a lot.
What does that sound like to you?
Like people taking our grandparents?
Last name, yeah.
Isn't that weird? So mom's maiden name is Berg. Mm-hmm. There's a term called bergtaking or bergtalking. So berg means mountain.
Abducting?
Yes, and taken by a troll most often into the mountains.
Really?
Oh. Taking into the berg. Bergtaking.
Sounds like a Bigfoot.
It's a real problem.
It's a real problem over there in Norway.
Norway and Scandinavia at large. But yeah, so we have, I feel like we kind of have a personal connection just because of, well, Berg is our mother's maiden name.
Yeah, it's one of the, any cultural touchstones that we have is pretty much the, because there was a bit of a strong Norwegian heritage. Grandma could still speak Norwegian. We had fiske balls on, you know, with the little fish balls. Her father only spoke Norwegian, very little English. And before we did the show, I remember seeing at her house, remember she had the Nisa? That was the first time I'd ever heard of it was growing up. Grandma had it hanging up. It was their house elf.
Yeah.
It was their Helga, I think was her name. We're going to get into some Nisa stories, but since then we've done stories on bizarrely believable accounts with entities that look just like this. Almost unbelievably, there were accounts of almost David the Gnome type characters.
Yeah, weird.
That people had cross-culturally
experiences. Cut people's shadows out?
Yes, remember? That was in the that was the British Isles. That was a, like a fairy type story.
Uh-huh.
But when we did that episode, we talked about things that we're going to talk about today, like the Holtafolk and the Vitra, which was Swedish. We had a listener write in about that.
The Vitra.
But then fairies in the British Isles. Then if you remember, we did the Native American lore that sounded almost identical in some cases to some of the things that are described in Scandinavia. We had the Nurembi, the little people of the crow from the Priory Mountains, and the, I'm going to get a lot of these pronunciations wrong today, but the Nimirigar.
Oh, right.
A legendary race of little people found in the folklore of the Shoshone people of the North American Rocky Mountains. A lot of tie-ins with boulders, sharp teeth. Some of these people eaters.
Little people eaters.
Tend to be a little nicer in Scandinavia, but it's, again, it's just weird that you have these patterns across the globe separated by time and distance, but have similar stories everywhere you go.
We'll even revisit the old Red Cap, which you remember that guy, John, the murderous gnome creature from, I think, Scottish or Anglo-Saxon. But these are, you know, so it's not all Norse, but because they tie in with these attributes across the earth. So strangely, these patterns, we're going to be discussing a lot of that in the second half and telling some stories, some true, allegedly true tales from real people.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this invisible world, this includes the gods, right? In Old Norse belief, religion, folklore, characters like Odin, Thor, these friendly fellas, Freya. There's basically an invisible world that is made up of these older kind of the Aesir, I think they're called. But then, of course, as well as the beings you're familiar with, like the Ulfar, the elves, the Dvegar, dwarves, Jotnar, which would be the giants. Well, they're referred to as giants, but they weren't technically giants. It's kind of a murky area. Some were, but not all of them. And then, of course, the gods, the Aesir and the Vanir. But this group, this large cosmology of the hidden world that runs alongside in the Norse belief is known as the Vetr. This also includes, like, you know, you got your land spirits, your water spirits, sea spirits, your house spirits, which these are kind of elements or elementals that you hear touchstones of in other Slavic belief systems, and, you know, your house fairies or house elves that live there and watch over the home, these kinds of ideas. So there's a large reality of this invisible world that these people lived and believed in. Of course, when we talk about, like, our ancestors, you know, not too long ago coming from Norway, there's Norwegians that listen to the show. Shout out, by the way, to all our Scandinavian listeners.
Well, yeah, Scandinavia. So that includes, for those of you who don't know, Scandinavia includes, well, that's Sweden and Norway, right?
And Denmark.
But if you say Nordic countries, that includes Iceland, Greenland, Norway, Sweden, Finland. But these are all, they have basically the shared Nordic heritage of the Old Norse. But this was interesting. I wanted to mention this real quick. When we talk about what they believe, when we talk about like this kind of pantheon of gods and these other invisible entities that lived around them every day. The gods basically lived in Asgard, which is like a large, almost recreation of our planet or Midgard. But they didn't have like daily they didn't pray to these beings
right
every day. It wasn't like that.
Unless they were in a cult, like the cult of Thor or something, but generally.
Right. But what's interesting, John, is that it was the creatures, the invisible creatures around them every day that they had relationships with.
They had to deal with.
They had to deal with them. They believed in them. They would
put butter out for the elves so right. they wouldn't bother them.
They would do kind of sacrificial negotiations with them. You know, we think about Norse mythology as being a mythology, but the Vikings, the Norse people didn't know that it was a mythology. They just believed this is the world that they lived in. Mm-hmm. So it was their reality.
Right.
I think it's an interesting point to make.
Yeah, not so much going to like a temple or a church and worshiping the gods per se, but working every day through ritual communication or whatever it was with the invisible world around you. And even you talk about the gods like Odin and Thor, it wasn't so much as far as we know, because you know the knowledge is kind of limited where we get this from, but
very oral history.
But even like Odin, for instance, or Thor, these weren't gods that could create anything they wanted to. For instance, Thor's hammer was made by the dwarves because the dwarves could make something that powerful out of metal, whereas they couldn't. Mm-hmm. They were the craftsmen in that way. So the gods, as far as we understand them, weren't these all perfect, all knowing. They were, you could actually make fun of the gods. It was almost this kind of, I don't know, more interchangeable, more engaging relationship
yeah.
than we think about when we think about like the worshiping of gods per se.
Right.
But all that said, we can only know so much. And this is kind of the interesting thing when we think about the history and the belief system in general. Everything we know about our ancestors when it comes to the Vikings or the pre-Viking older Norse or whoever it was, they didn't write any of this down. I mean, they did as far as in rune form, the runes that are rare, runic writing, which we don't have a lot of.
Or like pictograph art kind of stuff.
Right. Most of what we know comes from the Eddas. There's the prose Edda and the poetic Edda. And I think most predominantly people would agree that most comes from a fellow by the name of Snorri Sturluson.
Sure.
Right? John, you know him.
Good old Snorri.
Related to George Snorri, actually.
George Snorri.
I was going to say that.
We had a great uncle Snorri.
But it's interesting, and this is kind of where there's a little controversy because, you know, by the time he wrote the prose Edda, where we get a lot of our mythology of, you know, the gods and Thor and a lot of the terminology with the hidden world and the belief systems, it was already 200 years after Christianity had essentially subsumed the pagan beliefs of the Old Norse, the Viking religion and all that. So he's writing as a Christian in Iceland about Norse mythology, essentially.
And what year was this?
This was 1222, 1223 that he wrote this. But again, it is, he wanted to preserve the knowledge and beliefs of the Norse, the Old Norse belief system in a kind of structured way in this Edda. You know, before that it was all oral for the most part. But the problem with that, of course, is that the Norse belief system of these, of the hidden world and the gods, it was a living dynamic belief system. It was changeable based on who was telling the story. There were, I'm sure, common themes, and that was recorded down in the Eddas, but it was a living, breathing belief system. So the problem is when you codify something like the Bible per se, which is great to have for someone who wants to practice the religion, and even pagans who try to follow the Old Norse now will say, like, I wish we had a book, but we only know so much in certain things based on who wrote it. But that's the difference, is once you write it down, this doesn't necessarily reflect all the beliefs of the people of the time, the beliefs in trolls and fairies, and,
right.
or not fairies, that's more British, but you know, elves and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So we only have a glimmer, glimpses of this kind of pattern of this belief, but I think there's enough there to talk about at least some of what they believe existed and what maybe explains some of the phenomena we're seeing today. Call it under a different name, across the earth, in other places.
That's like, the belief hole twist.
That's the belief hole twist, is that commonality between Native America or wherever else.
Where Native America.
Yeah, America where there are Native Americans, right? No sense. I don't know. Canceled. you know, I don't speak so great sometimes, but you know what
you
I mean?
You say America.
I said something weird that sounds insensitive or something.
No, yeah. It didn't sound insensitive. It was just, you meant Native Americans or America.
Yeah.
Native America.
Indigenous said, America.
Where's that?
You know what I mean. Anyways, that's the point, is that there are commonalities. Maybe there's some reality to this. Maybe it is real. Maybe it's all real in the whole. But speaking of this invisible hidden world believed by the ancient Norse people,
how would one see that world?
How would you see that if you wanted to take a peek, John, in this other realm, the realm of the hidden? Well, let's find out.
Through your mind's eye?
Yes, actually, in a sense, that is true. But how might your mind's eye open to that? How could you get into that
with hard
state?
Drugs?
Hard drugs.
Potentially, actually, there's not hard, I guess, depending on what's
psychedelics.
Hard. There you go. That's actually coming up. There's a connection with psychedelics, shamanistic magic. But before we jump to that,
do they have some Nunu there?
They may have had something like Nunu. Probably wasn't frog poison. Or I guess Nunu was actually bark.
Yeah.
But they had something, they had things. and they're coming up. But before we do that, before we hop onto that, we might hop on top of a hedge. Meaning like a bush? Yes. Like a long bush. Like a long bush, a hedge. This is something called hedge riding.
Reminds me, I have to trim my hedges in spring.
Oh, I thought you were making a dirty joke. That's great, John. So your hedge is outside your house?
Yeah.
Let's bring it back home. Let's get real and practical right now. Actually, that might be a good idea for you to trim those hedges if you're going to climb atop. I think after this episode, you might want to climb on top of your hedge.
You want a flat standing surface.
Yeah, or sitting.
Or sitting.
Straddling, if you will.
Straddling the hedges.
Exactly.
Sounds like a poem.
It does, actually, doesn't it? By Walt Whitman, Straddling the Hedge. There is a practice called hedge riding. You may even be accused of being a hedge rider, as this fell out of fashion and Christianity kind of came in later. But hedge riding.
Oh, hedge riding.
Yeah. Like riding on top of a hedge, like as if it were a horse, per se.
I thought you meant hedge riding.
No.
Like riding. You're sitting on a hedge riding.
So this is the concept of a hedge or a fence, a gateway, if you will, in our world. Also being a symbolic boundary between our world and the hidden world. And the idea being, if you can climb atop a hedge and put yourself in a, like you said, John, use your mind's eye, put yourself in a mental state, you can peer over the edge into the other realm. This is kind of like a, what's the word for it? It's a kind of magic, sympathetic magic.
Oh yeah.
It's a sympathetic magic, but it's basically just a way to get yourself in this kind of meditative state to see that hidden realm. Just an interesting idea.
Another example of that, I don't think we have the story in here, but it was during a sacrifice, during a ceremony. Think of someone important had died in the Viking community in this village, and they took his wife, I believe, or a servant or something, who like volunteered to be killed, to be put in the mound with him, basically, so they could be with him in the afterlife. But they were swinging her like during the ceremony. Everybody's, you know, in this different state of altered state of mind, and maybe have taken some things, but also just like the chanting and the belief. And as they're lifting her over this archway, and as they, like the three times that she does it, she's screaming in ecstasy, and she says it's the first time.
She's screaming in ecstasy?
Yeah. Like just getting ready to be put back with her husband.
Wait. Okay, so
it's like a volunteer.
How are they
sacrifice.
Killing her?
Well, they haven't yet.
They're on the way to do it.
They're on the way to do it.
They throw her in a volcano or something?
A volcano.
They're getting woo.
They're flinging her, but this is the ceremony aspect of it. So as they're, and it goes back to what Jeremy's talking about, the hedge riding. As they swing her in the air and she can see over the archway, as she's screaming ecstasy, she claims to see, I think the first time she sees strangers, but who are dead basically on the other side. Then the next time she sees her family waiting on the other side.
And then the third time. At all. I'm really having a hard time picturing this scene.
And then the third time,
they're lifting her basically above like a doorway, like an archway. And every time her vision goes above the door, she sees
things. It's just such a weird concept.
Yeah. Well, she also in being in an altered state, whether it's using
over a doorway,
a door frame or an archway.
So any one will do.
Well, this is a ceremony. So imagine there's some sort of altar.
Right. Okay.
Think like Stonehenge.
Anyways, the third time they swing her up and she sees her husband waiting there. And then they end her life somehow.
But you don't she know just how? Moves into the next. Well, that's the best part of the story.
I know. I don't remember. Maybe we can drop that in.
I think she dies of ecstasy.
It's a good way to go.
But the whole point in this culture was that, as we believe too, like there's the death, the mortal death is not the end of life. And for them, you went on. Well, in the expansion,
mortal life is the dream.
Right.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, they believe that as well. Well, they believe that it was real, but it was also, we're living in a world that's surrounded by the extension of this reality.
Oh, I get you.
In the expansion, we're going to get more into their afterlife beliefs, the different places you'd go. Because I think there's a misconception that the Vikings or the Norse people died, they went to Valhalla. Or if a lot of people think, the assumption is that if you were a fighter and you died on the battlefield, you went to Valhalla automatically. Well, that's not the case. It was like half of them and they went to other places. So there's a whole landscape of afterlife that we're going to get into that's really interesting in the expansion. But yeah, their idea was that when you die, you move on and you still exist in different ways depending on what you did in this life. You go to these different lands and you have different experiences. And there's aspects to the soul we're going to get into. Really interesting.
And some people don't move on and they become
ghosties.
Oh, yeah. Or reanimated corpse type figures called the.
Oh, gosh. What?
Right? The Draugr. The Draugr and the Hab, I don't have it in front of me, the Habui?
Augbui.
Or something to that effect. The Mound Dwellers.
Yeah.
Where they protect their mounds, their burial mounds. But yeah, that's going to be in the expansion. A lot of creepy tales and interesting lore with that. But it's interesting you say the ecstasy thing.
Yeah.
Before the sacrifice. I don't know if this was like a common, must have been fairly common in ancient sacrificial type scenarios. Because I remember we did the man-eating plant.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking about that. Mm-hmm. In South America. A controversial tale.
Yeah. But as it is told in one of the alleged witnessing of the man-eating plant, this giant
woman was being sacrificed.
She was being sacrificed. And when they put her on top of this plant, the nectar from it or whatever, I don't know if she was consuming it or was if it was saturating her body or whatever it was, but it put her in this ecstatic state, this ecstasy. So she was like writhing and singing and ecstatic and before she was being eaten. Mm-hmm. I know it's just kind of an interesting parallel to this. I don't know how, but they probably didn't kill the Norse character with a plant, but
a giant man-eating plant. No, right now.
But anyways, it's interesting. But again, back to that lifting above the door frame or the gateway, the archway, three times. Mm-hmm. And each time you see closer to the other world, the other realm. Anyways, this was a practice that you could do as a commoner, mm-hmm. right? It wasn't necessarily that you had to be a Volva, which is a witch, one of the names for the magical woman practitioner of the Norse witchcraft.
Seer.
Or a seer, yeah.
And an easy way to do it is just look between your legs. It's another way you can see into the other world.
Yeah, this is an interesting one too. Looking between your legs. So like bending over and looking through your own legs. Apparently it can allow you to see. And it was interesting is the concept of, you think about children do this a lot. They'll look through their, if any guys out there have kids, you might see your kid like looking through their own
legs.
It's
the beginning of a horror movie.
Huh?
And you just like bend over and look through your legs and there's some like.
Sometimes your brain, I just don't, like, I want to know where it's, how it gets
well,
there.
Well, that'd just be a freaky thing to, you know, you're like looking through your
legs. Oh, I see what you're saying. So then you see something skitter across the hall.
Yeah.
Through
your legs. Right.
Yeah.
No, that'd be a great short. A great horror short.
That would be a little short film. But yeah, because you're looking at the world in a different way.
It is a sort of altered state.
Just looking upside down.
I do that sometimes to this day. I just go like, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is a different world. It does make you feel kind of different. You know, I like it.
I hang upside down like a bat.
Yeah. Do you ever like, oh, this, I never see the world this way.
Well, you've done that for so long now. It's probably very normal for you.
He is a vampire, by the way.
I mean, it definitely feels weird.
It still feels weird.
But you're also in a smaller room.
Yeah. It's not really like a, it's more like I close my eyes when I do it.
Oh, you're not going to see anything then.
Really?
Is it because it's too scary?
No, it's just, it's like a meditation state, meditative state.
Yeah.
It really, when you flip upside down and you do get used to it, it's very calming.
Mm-hmm. It really, can that hurt you? Like if you do it too long? Like all the blood going
I mean, obviously if you did it for like an hour, probably wouldn't be good. I mean, the longest I've done it is probably like 10 minutes.
Will it make you too long over time? Like too tall?
You be too long after a while.
It'll stretch you out. Yeah. Jonathan Longbottom.
That is a point there. The altered state of consciousness. So obviously you look through your legs, you're probably not just going to see. But if you, there's other aspects that go into it when you're practicing this in a magical sort of way. There's the altered state of consciousness, whether it's meditation or an herb or whatever.
So basically you're combining that altered kind of mental state with a gateway of some kind, whether it's your own legs or, but considering the idea of children doing this fairly frequently, and also the connection of children
being so close to the other side
that sometimes they see things.
Yeah.
Right. They'll see allegedly spirits or whatever in the room. Maybe when they look through their legs, it's like the last attempt to see that other realm that they can see when they're younger or before they've come here.
So if you see your little cute little girl lean over between her legs and like wave to something,
don't look through those legs. You might see something you don't want to see. Leah was doing that at Brad's the other day.
She's looking through her legs.
She's going like upside down at me.
What
are you looking for, little girl?
Is there a spirit above my head, Leah?
Well, perhaps a more practical approach to this.
Segue.
to looking into the other realm, as well as other potential magical applications, is the use of the hag stone. Or the witch stone. Or the fairy stone, depending on your preference.
Or the Odin stone.
Or the Odin stone. And we have a great little breakdown. Actually, this comes from longtime listener and friend of the show, Jen. She has an Instagram called Lauren Legend, and I happened to find this post from her, specifically about the Hagstone.
Yeah, so she does like a blog on folklore and...
She's my go-to source for any kind of folklore, legend, mythology. Great wealth of information there. We'll put a link in the show notes to her Instagram, Lauren Legend. It's really good. But this bit describing the Hagstone comes from her.
Let's hear it.
A witch stone is a rock with a naturally occurring hole or two that you can find next to the sea or a river. These hold stones have been collected for spiritual use all over Europe and even Egypt. They are believed to be powerful, protective talismans, a belief bolstered by the idea that magic cannot work on moving water. And since the stone is often shaped by the water, it becomes a sort of shield against spells and other harmful magic. Some say the witch stones may be hung on a bedpost or hidden under a pillow to ward off nightmares. A sailor might tie the stone to a rope on a ship to encourage good weather. In Celtic folklore, if you peer through the hole of the stone, you may see the realm of the Fae folk. If the witch stone breaks, it's said that the power of the stone has been spent to protect life. However, a witch stone must find you. Buying one or making one simply makes the witch stone like any other ordinary stone. So the next time you're at the coast or walking along a river, keep an eye out for the elusive witch stone to protect you from magical harm.
I thought that was cool. I never heard the idea before that magic can't work on moving water.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that these stones naturally have a hole carved into them by the water. So you could buy hag stones, witch stones. I've seen them like drilled, but apparently they only work.
They don't work.
According to Jen and her research, that they're naturally formed by water because
they look cool.
So we have a listener out there who has an Etsy hagstone shop. I'm just like, damn it.
She's going to have to start finding them. But yeah, we'll have pictures in our show notes, guys. But it's basically a water-weathered stone with a hole, like a small hole in it. And this hole allegedly can be used to see through to the other realm. She mentions there in Celtic folklore, the Fae, realm of the Fae. But of course, in Norse, it would be, I don't know, the hidden world of the
hold of folk,
invisible people, elves, and what have you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm seeing all these parallels with all the spiritual, physical stuff, like we talked about, like thresholds, doorways before on multiple episodes, whether we're shadow people or
barricading the boogeyman.
Barricading the boogeyman or the water. We talked about barricading the boogeyman and how, you know, certain tribes would bury their dead on an island in the river because they couldn't cross over the water.
There's always a connection with water.
Yeah. Really interesting.
Yeah. Even when you, with experiences with entities, I don't think we've have, I don't know if I grabbed this story, but just briefly, there was a story I came across when looking for elf stories or gnome stories, you know, of the hidden folk. And there was one, and someone was just saying, I forget where I found it, but they're basically saying, like, yeah, my grandfather told the story that this thing would come into his room. And it was basically what we always hear was the leathery, pitted face, diminutive creature would show up and no one could explain it. And it could walk through the wall, all these kinds of things. But they happened to mention offhandedly that the house was built on a reclaimed swamp. And that's just such a common thing, like around marshland, along a riverside in California. I don't know if it's San Pedro, I forget where it was, but there's the river there where we told the story.
San Joaquin Valley.
And this elf fairy gnome, evil gnome thing that ate their chickens.
Oh yeah, that's right. I remember that.
Ducks kept appearing in different houses along the river.
Yeah.
But there it is, the river again. But yeah, so this tool was a tool of the witch, or as witches were known, shamans, seers in the Norse culture of the Old Norse. They were called the Volva. By the way, I don't think we mentioned this before, but if we mispronounce words, that's definitely going to happen in this episode.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get everything right for sure. But the Volva, the witch, the seeress, the Viking witch, also known as the Spakona or the Sidrakona, meaning prophecy woman or magic woman. But they were like a shaman.
Yeah, super important in the culture. Not like the sort of middle-aged witch in the Christian tradition where it's an outcast.
Right.
Satan worshiper.
Right. They were an important part of basically prophesying. They practiced a type of magic called sidr. And some suggest that this was a visionary kind of hallucinatory or psychedelic magic. And there's suggestive evidence for that. Actually, in 1954, a 9th century grave of a Volva was discovered, which would be the early Viking Age. This was discovered in Jutland, I'm not sure how you say it, in Denmark, a peninsula there, at what's called the Ring Fortress Firket. Now, what's interesting is in her grave, they found among like her staff, you know, you could think of it as like her magic staff and her tools, her bowls for mixing potions. They found seeds from the plant, the poisonous plant, henbane. Now, henbane is known to cause hallucinations. So it's suggesting that part of her rituals, that could have been the point to get people into an altered state, even warriors before battle. And you hear about like the berserkers, right?
The
intense fighters that seem to be almost inhuman with their personality as they go into battle. These altered states.
It makes sense. You had the Oracle of Delphi. I think they've found different sorts of hallucinogenic herbs, residue from thousands of years ago. Like,
and we can't identify all of it too. That's what's kind of interesting. Like henbane, it's a tool in witchcraft that's referred to as witch's salve. It's rubbed into the skin and it produces this psychedelic effect. And in her grave, they found two bronze bowls, which might have been used for mixing these kinds of magical recipes or potions. But what's interesting is they could not identify the mixtures. And yeah, this goes back to, I think it was in ancient Rome or Greece, where they believe now that there were ceremonies where there's a certain drink, an elixir of the gods, that now they believe was psychedelic. They may have been used to communicate with the gods, but it's not a part of our history because it wasn't until recently that this theory came up that there is the elixir of the god that was real and psychedelic. And I don't know if they have, that's something you'd have to ask Graham Hancock about. I know he's talked about it. The idea that there was this hallucinogen that may have been used back then.
Before we get into stories of encounters with maybe some of the strange creatures that live in this invisible realm, I wanted to talk about the four parts of the soul. I thought this was really interesting.
Yeah, this reminded me of the Chindi, which we've talked about before.
Right, where there are aspects to, after someone dies, aspects to the soul, parts that move on and parts that linger.
Right. I think it was it Navajo?
Mm-hmm.
The concept of the Chindi was basically, we talked about this before, John, the spirit scum. The piece of the soul that the residue that's left here, that's too heavy.
I really don't like that word.
Chindi?
Spirit scum.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know why it disturbs
it's two words.
Whatever.
We had another term for it.
Phrase.
wraith residue was the other phrase. We use that better?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Spirit scum just, I don't know.
It sounds grody.
Yeah, it just like sounds gross.
Clean like between the tiles of a bathroom floor.
Something along those lines. Yeah. Go ahead.
How about discorporeal solve?
Sure. That's dumb.
Ghost goo.
Ghost goo, there you go. So it's left over. It's what's, according to the Chindi concept, is it's too heavy to ascend. So it stays here. That's why you don't want people dying in the house, because that can get stuck,
right?
Get gooey on the ethereal walls of the home, and then you got a haunting, right? But it's not actually the soul. It's a gooey echo, right?
Yeah.
That kind of idea. So that it's just interesting because there's a bit of a parallel here, right, Chris, with the Old Norse beliefs of the four parts of the soul.
One of these aspects of the soul, and we're going to go in a round, I think it'd be fun to do. But these are the four aspects of the Norse soul. They believe that your soul was made up of these aspects and what they would experience after death, these aspects of your soul. The first aspect of the soul is the hammer. It's one's physical appearance, which could and would change. The hammer could be manipulated for shape-shifting or could change color after death.
This would be like the visible ghost.
Yeah.
The next part of the soul would be the hugur, one's personality or character, which continued on after death. So the essence, the personality of the soul.
Yeah, the motivation, the consciousness.
Right.
The next aspect of the soul is ilgia, one's totem or familiar spirit, which was unique to an individual and mirrored their hugur. A shy person might have a deer as their filgia, while a warrior would have a wolf.
Like you, John.
Super wolf.
Super wolf, John.
That's my Twitter name.
Super wolf?
John's familiar spirit.
It's funny, I was just asking about Masters of the Universe. What was his cat's name?
Oh.
He-Man's cat?
I just read this for some reason. She-Ra.
No, that's a woman.
Oh, yeah. Battle Cat.
Is that it?
Battle Cat.
He had a name.
Battle Cat is a huge armored tiger that serves as the companion of He-Man in battle.
It's going to be a name.
Yeah, he's got to have a name.
Battle Cat's name.
Awesome name, though.
He-Man's cat.
Here, Battle Cat, here.
Cringer. Oh, that's right.
What?
Yeah.
Are we in a Mandela effect situation?
I remember Cringer? That. What a cringe name.
Whenever Adam transforms into He-Man, he uses his power sword to transform Cringer into the much larger and mightier Battle Cat.
Oh, that makes sense, because before he's transformed, he's probably a scary cat.
I didn't even know He-Man ever transformed. I thought he was always He-Man.
What?
I forget all of the lore.
It's because you watched it when you should, which is when you were a child.
I used to measure time. I probably already said this.
By He-Man episodes?
Yes.
I did that with Simpsons episodes. I still do that with Simpsons episodes.
That's weird.
I know. I need to go back to school. Someone buy me a watch.
I'm like, Mom, how long did it get there? Three He-Man episodes, John.
How long did it get there?
Three more He-Man
How long
episodes?
Till we get there?
Those were the days.
All right. The last aspect of the soul is the hamingya. Definitely the incorrect pronunciation. This is one's inherent success in life, seen as a quality or protective spirit, which was both caused by a person's hugur and formed it. One's hamingya would be passed down through a family for good or ill.
That's interesting. So it's almost like a family, could be a family curse or a family fortune, like good fortune.
Like, oh, that's the Rockefellers. They're always in good fortune.
It's like
fortune.
Karmic ancestry.
Yes.
Yeah. And I like that it's formed by the person's personality, essentially their hugur, that will inform whether or not they would be successful and pass that down, or if they would be, you know, like a family that doesn't do well generationally. Yeah, the generational kind of curse idea. Like that family has a bad name, and names were important, right? The idea of honor and carrying that down. But it's interesting, yeah, these four aspects that make up an individual, really, individual's life, and that they're tied to the idea of the soul and what happens after death, and that yeah. they can disperse. And by the way, unfortunately, the Fylgja, the familiar spirit, didn't survive after death. So your wolf, John, yeah. your super wolf, would not live on beyond your life. They're attached to you as your familiar spirit.
Interesting.
But then they go when you die. So interesting. All interesting stuff.
Yes.
And Jake will be in the show notes.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of familiar spirits.
He may be in the animation too, depending on how the guys do that.
This is John's German Shepherd, for those of you who aren't familiar with John's dog.
He's like a German Shepherd lab mix. He looks more like a lab, but acts like a German Shepherd.
And people have been asking, so we're going to put him in the show notes. And we'll be a nice picture of Jake there.
I hope you enjoy him.
He's a cutie.
Well, speaking of monsters,
good segue.
Jake can definitely be a real monster if he doesn't know yet. Speaking of monsters, let's get into some monster stories, yes. some encounters with monsters.
Some of the creatures of the Nordic lore. Yeah, so I wanted to do this, John. When we talked about doing this episode, you were excited about the troll idea. What was that movie? Was it Troll Hunter that came out that was really good?
It was really good.
Yeah. So I was excited because I was like, okay, I'm going to find, I don't know why naively, I was like, I'm going to be able to find some good encounters with trolls.
No,
trolls.
Couldn't.
So this is kind of the interesting thing. So troll, to troll or not to troll. So troll isn't really a thing in Norse beliefs. I mean, it is, but it's really a category. So almost anything can be a troll. It's basically a dangerous or evil entity or creature. Like now we have the idea of the troll that's kind of evolved through folklore, but it's interesting. And you have an interesting thought about that, Chris, I know.
Yeah.
But just to say, initially, when we talk about like the Eddas.
Which are these sagas written?
And then the sagas that were written after the Eddas, they kind of codified the ideas and the beliefs of the Norse people. It's interesting because the word troll in the Eddas specifically were only used a couple times. So there's one reference in the Völuspá from the Poetic Edda, where they refer to someone being born in a trollish shape. So what is trollish? That we know that something was born trollish in a trollish shape, but what does that mean? And then another reference from the Prose Edda that refers to Thor when he's gone out away into the eastern parts to thrash trolls, which sounds like an awesome pastime, by the way. But he's out there thrashing trolls. What is a troll? We don't know. It's not written down what a troll is. But what's interesting about that is we have this idea of what trolls are now in the folklore. You have mountain trolls, forest trolls, cave trolls, but it's possible that just because they're not recorded in the writings of the Eddas, that they do exist in the folklore and they are referenced in the Eddas because there was something at one point potentially called a troll. Because even where we think it comes from, the word trollen is a Proto-Germanic word, but it's also suggested that it's of an unknown origin. So we just don't know. So yeah. Was there something? Was there an actual troll at one time that we now refer to things as trollish and put in this category of evil, ugly, dangerous, stay away from them if you're human.
Basically monsterish.
Monsterish. Was there an original monster troll?
Well, that's the thing is there is in Scandinavian folklore, which comes you right. know, through time through. And that's the thing is like, as we talked about before, a lot of this is oral tradition, oral belief.
Right.
So it doesn't all get written down, but it is totally possible to me that the folklore that gets carried through over centuries holds maybe some specific things that were like, let's say the troll of the folklore. It's pretty descriptive. We have yeah. some of that coming up. So what I'm saying is that could have existed further back in time. It just wasn't written down. So you just right. get these more like descriptors
referencing
troll.
It's like yeah. if Polish people didn't exist anymore for whatever reason, we didn't have a history written about the Polish people in the future, but there's a term called like the Polish smile.
Yeah.
Oh, he has a very Polish smile. I don't even know what that would be. I don't know any Polish people, but just because we don't have a written history of this kind of people or thing, it might still be in the phrasing.
It's like an adjective.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if it's a lost people or a lost monster, like the troll. Anyways, there are actually some interesting written descriptions that are kind of fun. Actually, before we get into these descriptions of the trolls, the few that we have from the sagas, I think we should take a quick break before we get real trolly. But before we do, let's talk about the expansion. What's coming up?
What is coming up in the expansion, Jer?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm glad I asked you to ask me. So we're going to be basically getting into more of the strange and the surreal, the unreal, the hidden world of the Old Norse. We're going to be getting into a little bit of the afterlife concepts of the Norse people. Very interesting stuff. Also, one of my personal favorite topics that we haven't got to talk about yet, the undead. Oh, yeah. Some very creepy tales and stories from the Haugbui versus the Draugr, the mound dweller, and the basically the reanimated corpse that is a vicious, terrible, frightening thing.
Sometimes friendly, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, the mound dweller, yeah, he can be pretty jovial. Actually, kind of a sweet story in there about him. And then, of course, the Huldra, the seducer, the seductress, forest spirit.
Seemingly a beautiful woman, but with a tail.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. And we actually have a story recorded in 1935 of an alleged account, an encounter with the Huldra.
You don't want to miss that.
So it's going to be really interesting. And then we have a couple alleged origins of the elves and of the Tussi, the Tussar?
Tusa? It's like the Swedish Nisa.
Gnome. Nisa or gnome, goblin, if you will.
Yeah.
A lot of these words are kind of interchangeable. But the origins here are interesting because they go into the concept of when Christianity kind of ran into the Norse belief system and then eventually subsuming it. But there was a period where they kind of coexisted. And so in an effort to explain where the elves came from, there were myths that were built up. There were stories and legends, you know, that blends the idea of Christianity and those beliefs, but some really colorful, interesting tales. That's all coming up in the expansion,
like
guys.
A fallen angel tie-in too.
Fallen
interesting.
Angels. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting stuff, guys. So if you're interested in that, and interested in more stories, just as produced, researched.
For the price of a cup of coffee every month, you can be with us so much more.
Absolutely.
What are you waiting for?
Double your time in the hole.
Yes!
Don't miss out.
Absolutely. All right, guys, so enjoy this clip of this week's expansion episode, and we will see you after the break.
Access granted.
Though the drug usually presages death, there is an amusing account in Nord Norge of a Nordlending.
Nordlending.
Nord Norg of a Nordlending.
Of a Nordlending.
No one knows what this means. Can we say normal words here?
That means the Norwegian from northern Norway is the Nordlending.
Why didn't you just write that?
I don't know. I like the word.
It sounds cooler.
It sounds cooler, but no one understands what it means.
Well, now they do.
Though the drug usually presages death, there is an amusing account in Nord Norge of a Nordlending who managed to outwit him. It was Christmas Eve, and Ola went down to his boathouse to get the keg of brandy he had bought for the holidays. When he got in, he noticed a drog sitting on the keg, staring out to the sea. Ola, with the great presence of mind and great bravery, it might not be amiss to state that he had already done some drinking, tiptoed up behind the drog and struck him sharply in the small of the back, so that he went flying out through the window.
Powerful man.
With sparks hissing around him as he hit the water, Ola knew he had no time to lose, so he set off at a great rate, running through the churchyard, which lay between his home and the boathouse. As he ran, he cried,
"Up! All you Christian souls, and help me!"
Then he heard the sound of fighting between the ghosts and the drog, who were battling each other with coffin boards and bunches of seaweed.
It's an awesome scene.
Yeah.
Pro wrestling. Norse.
The next morning, when people came to church, the whole yard was strewn with coffin covers, boat boards, and seaweed. After the fight, which the ghosts won, the drog never came back to that district.
Welcome back. So we were talking about what trolls are, and we mentioned already that it's kind of a murky descriptor of all things evil and dangerous in the wilderness.
But there are some descriptions in the sagas.
There are, and we're going to read them. John, you have the first one. This comes from a Norwegian saga known as the Saga of Grim Shaggy Cheek. And in this saga, in this point, the character Grimir is captured by a hideous troll woman described as such.
No taller than a 7-year-old girl, she was long and hard of face, bent... Excuse me?
Don't laugh at the troll woman, Chris.
That's like that description, hard of face.
She was long and hard of face, bent-nosed and bare-shouldered, swarthy and gaunt-cheeked, foul of appearance and bald in front. Her hair and skull were both black, and she wore a shriveled skin cloak.
Skin cloak.
I want a shriveled skin cloak.
Yes, please.
It's like a little Hannibal Lecter vibe going on.
A little disturbing, yeah. It doesn't say animal skin.
That's
so
true.
I infer that it's people skin.
Yeah.
Could be.
Creepy.
Skin cloak. No thanks. In the Ilúga saga, there is this accounting. Mucus was hanging down in front of her mouth. She had a beard, but her head was bald. Her hands were like the claws of an eagle, but both arms were singed. And the baggy shirt she was wearing reached no lower than her loins in back, but all the way to her toes in front. Her eyes were green and her forehead broad. Her ears fell widely. No one would call her pretty.
Aw. It's because she wasn't.
Apparently. I mean, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, so I'm not going to say that, Sean.
That's true.
She could have been pretty to other trolls. To men trolls. Trollmen, she might have been, probably.
Men trolls.
Probably the case. So here we have the descriptions of hideous beings. So far, they've just been women. Was this just a certain way that evil little creatures type dangerous entities were described as trolls? Were they actually a genre of beings? Mm-hmm. Chris, why don't you tell us? This comes from the Lenmabok, Book of Settlements.
Icelandic,
yes. In this case, a man runs into a male troll. Aha! It's not just female.
Oh, we get a big one finally, the size of a giant.
Now, this one's interesting. This is kind of your typical, what you'd expect as far as our modern mythology of the mountain troll, if you will. Quote,
this creature was sitting atop the cliffs, named Drangr, and was rocking his feet back and forth so that they touched the surf, and he crashed them together to make spray. These cliffs, known as Lóndrangr, are 61 meters and 75 meters tall, respectively, making the troll well over 100 meters tall.
That's interesting. That just takes me back to the concept of the giants in the Bible, right? Mm. That concept of the Nephilim.
Oh, yeah. After the flood, they're
giants in the earth in those days.
Is that the mud flood theory? Is that all the giants, they just became these rock formations around the world?
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, there's different mud floods, but the idea that the deluge, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a book that actually Jen sent me that's really good about mythologies from all over the world. There's a section on the deluge, and it's all across all cultures that believe not only that there was this deluge, but that giants were destroyed then.
Yeah, it's interesting how it breaks it down in the book. We'll have to do that sometime. Yeah, but in Iceland, you know, this one comes from Iceland. In Iceland, I think there are people that still give tours to like try to take you to find a troll, a mountain troll.
Yeah, there's like, mountain trolls. So
you can point them out. Oftentimes, they're like represented in features of the landscape, things like that.
Yeah, the idea that they were turned to stone mm-hmm. when hit by the sun. I think
when you're not looking, they wake back up.
Yeah, there's a group of trolls that have been turned to stone when they were trying to pull Viking ships ashore in the night, and then dawn struck and they turned to stone and you can still see them. There's a few stories like that.
Right. And obviously a lot of this kind of stuff is, you know, you can argue definitely a representation of a way that people explain the relationship to the wildlife, to the environment, the geography.
To the simulacra.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But I don't think so.
Sometimes
trolls are real.
You have real experiences.
I believe in giants, sir. That's my personal take.
And we're about to get into here.
But they did think in the Middle Ages, they took it so seriously that even in Norwegian law books, there were laws regarding trolls. You weren't, for instance, allowed to consort with trolls by night. So no consorting with trolls. You couldn't loiter for trolls, right? Like you couldn't like hang around waiting for a troll to appear to gain its knowledge, apparently. It gives you like a leg up or something. And these laws, they go back to apparently 1274. So this is like right after Snorri, the guy we mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. had written his Prose Edda. So this at this time, it was still like a living belief that there were trolls. And of course, today we hear about the two types of trolls mainly, right? You have the mountain or the forest troll, large, dumb, brutish creatures is how they're depicted. And then also not so friendly are the cave trolls, which live completely underground usually. And you know, they're smaller with large round abdomens. If you guys have seen David the Gnome, these kinds of trolls, short stubby arms and legs.
Oh yeah, the David the Gnome's nemesis.
Yeah, but they both are unfriendly, generally depicted as stupid and dangerous, but they may tell you clever riddles from time to time. If you are a traveler passing through, you have the bridge troll. Anyways, these are all concepts of the troll. Was there an actual troll at one time? Was there this concept of this creature that existed out there? At the end of the day, I think there's really just one way to break down what a troll is, and I found a great clip that explains this in detail about what a troll is. I'm going to play it right now.
Oh, so you're playing?
Ready for this, John?
But sometimes traveling can be dangerous because there's some creatures in the forest who really enjoy causing trouble. Mm-hmm. They're the ugly and nasty trolls.
That's all you need to know.
Is picking on everyone else in the forest and generally raising a ruckus. Fortunately, they are also the stupidest creatures in the world. So
I remember this.
That's so mean.
I know you're there. You can't fool me.
I just love that. Fortunately, they're also the stupidest creatures in the world. It's a little unfair, David. Pretty harsh, David. Anyways, that was from the archives of the educational...
The true story of David the Gnome.
David the Gnome. Yeah. If you guys haven't seen that, link in the show notes. Best show ever. Well, it was worth it, Jeremy. Thank you.
Right next to Maya the Bee.
Never saw that.
What?
Chris says we did.
Yeah, we used to watch it at daycare.
I don't have no recollection of Maya the Bee whatsoever.
You'd remember the song if you heard it.
Maya the Bee. I've heard it referenced, but I don't remember it from my childhood. And that was later in our years.
What about, what was Doug Funny?
Oh, that was later too. That was like elementary school.
What was
time.
That called?
Doug Funny?
What was the show called?
Doug.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that funny? Okay, let's... Patty Mayonnaise. Oh, I had such a crush.
Shut up. Weirdo. She's a weird-looking cartoon.
I was a weird-looking boy. Okay, I was a good-looking boy. Well, with that introduction to the world of the troll, I did come across a story of a tiny troll thing. Real encounter. And again, troll being just a strange... scary creature in general. That's how this person referred to it, was a tiny troll thing. This comes from Taranaki, New Zealand.
Not in Scandinavia.
Of course, yeah. Which again, these things were everywhere. This took place in the 90s and happened around 3 a.m.
Oh, perfect.
Person never had any supernatural experiences before or after, but has an unusually vivid memory of the experience, which you hear about a lot when people encounter these kinds of things.
And where does this come from?
You mean the report?
Mm-hmm.
It comes from the fairy census.
Yeah, which is an excellent resource, by the way. Like
tons of encounters with fairies and gnomes and elves from Scandinavia and
very
the
detailed
and British,
in the,
UK.
Very professionally resourced.
Yeah.
That's the way to say it.
The British Isles. So check that out. It'll be in the show notes, guys.
Okay. I was 15 years old. I woke up and a little green man being sort of looked like a gremlin / imp. Khaki green skin, bald pointed ears, wrinkly weathered skin.
There it is.
Unclothed, about a foot and a half tall and stocky, was standing by my bed looking at me. I am 100% sure I was fully awake. I looked at him for a bit, stunned. He didn't look mean, more curious. Then he looked like he was going to walk closer to me. I yelled, "What the f*** is that?"
There you go.
And threw my pillow at it. Then after a few moments, I peeked under the pillow and nothing was there. This was in my basement bedroom. I fled upstairs and slept in my sister's room that night and slept upstairs for a week or two after the incident. Everyone laughed at me and said I was dreaming, but to this day, I can remember it totally and was wide awake. The area that the house was built on was a reclaimed swamp. I didn't think it looked like an alien, but who knows? More like a tiny troll thing. As noted previously, about a foot and a half tall, stocky, unclothed, khaki-colored, wrinkly, weathered skin like an elderly man who has seen a lot of sun. Pointed ears, small nose, presumably male, didn't seem female, bald.
There you go, from the fairy census. I'll have all those details at the end.
It's funny, that comment, I hear that a lot, like, didn't seem like an alien, or I don't know, I don't think it was an alien. In our current time, that's where people always go to, is like, must have been some otherworldly creature from another, like, physical planet.
Right.
Obviously, that's not the only explanation in the whole.
And if it was all, you know, if it was all, they say that aliens now are like the fairies of the past, you know, like people don't see fairies anymore, or elves, they see aliens. Well, that's not the case. People are still seeing these weird troll-like things.
Yeah.
People just don't talk about them as much anymore because now they're not in vogue. Like the E.T., the alien.
And the wrinkly weathered skin thing. Mm-hmm. And that comes up so much in these stories. And our personal submissions from people.
Yeah, our own accounts from people.
The wrinkly weathered skin. People who haven't talked about this with anybody, they'll submit these stories. They'll hear our listener stories. Like, I saw a leathery skinned thing. Like, it's so common. It's so strange.
Yeah, so that was the story with Reclaimed Swamp.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, moving right along.
Yes.
I wanted to get into dwarves. Now, this is interesting.
As I mentioned earlier, the gods in the Norse belief system, like Thor and Odin, had the spear, Thor had the hammer. These were made by the dwarves. They were known to have these powers of crafting. And even when you hear encounters, it's so interesting. I came across an encounter where they said there was this dwarf-like thing on the edge of their bed that was looked like they were crafting something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just weird because this idea that they live underground, they're excellent crafters, and these weird patterns that witnesses have seen things like this, even though they're not, these people aren't necessarily Scandinavian or have any history with this, the elements are the same. So is there a common reality to this going back?
And are a lot of these things the same with different people just putting different names on them?
Right. And it's interesting because I didn't know this, but dwarves, according to the first largest written accounting of the lore from the Old Norse from Snorri that we mentioned earlier, dwarves are essentially the same as black elves or dark elves. They live underground. They're separate from the light elves.
Yeah. Travel through the earth.
They're kind of synonymous, but they travel through the earth. And that's another thing we hear when we talk about Paracelsus, who came up with the term gnome.
Yeah.
He basically describes the same creature, living underground, crafters of sorts.
He's a fascinating guy.
And Paracelsus, yeah, he was a fascinating scientist, philosopher character. We covered in the Terrorized by Gnomes episode, guys. Check that out. Link in the show notes. But anyways, yeah, the idea of the dwarves being the dark elves, again, that just comes from Snorri, as far as we know, which is where a lot of this information comes from. So there's a lot of challenges to the lore and to, you know, what to believe about the Old Norse and what not to, but this is going off of the only information we can have at this
right.
time.
And then down into the folklore, which is where
exactly
we can talk about my favorite little guy because of the family history, the Nissa or Nissa.
Nissa.
Or the Tusa, depending on which Scandinavian country you're from.
What is that, Chris? What is the Nissa?
This is your typical David the Gnome type thing. And this is, again, odd because there's a very specific description that comes up. It's almost like a uniform.
Right.
And that's what makes it, it once seems so unbelievable. And then, but on the other hand, when it keeps coming up in different places and even around the world under different names with the pointed hat, often red.
Red hat.
Red hat, red cap. Sometimes green, as we'll see in the expansion with the wood elves.
Clothes are often primary colors, like very saturated blue, greens, yellows.
And even this Nissa experience that we're about to tell, again, deeply tanned and wrinkled face, completely different observer, different time. But again, always with this sort of either ruddy or pitted brown face or darkish tan, sometimes dirty.
Yeah, because they're digging through the
earth. They're going through the
earth. Coming up into your bedroom through a flower pot.
All right, let's hear this tale. This is called Run-In with a House Gnome. This comes from Oppland, Norway.
In the 90s, right?
In the 90s. This was seen by a girl in the 90s, and this was in a private home around noon. Let's hear it. My sister was visiting an elderly lady who lived in what was said to be the oldest house in town. The house was over 170 years old. The lady my sister was visiting showed her into the lounge,
right this way, dear,
which was a very pleasant and sunny room with windows on both sides. The elderly lady went off to make coffee, leaving my sister alone in the room. Suddenly, a movement in the doorway caught my sister's eye, and as she looked, she was amazed to see a diminutive figure dressed in leggings, a jacket, and a hat, which rose into a soft and floppy point. All the clothes were in bright colors, sky blue, fire engine red, and yellow. The yellow may have been green. The figure had a face which my sister described as male, deeply tanned and wrinkled, and with bright and intelligent black button-like eyes. I don't remember if she mentioned a beard. The creature was not as tall as the back of the sofa it was standing next to, so I'm guessing it was less than 30 to 36 inches tall. The little man was studying my sister intently. But when he realized she had seen him, he quickly stepped behind the sofa, which was in front of my sister. My sister rose from her sofa to kneel on the second sofa so that she could look over the back of it to get a better look at the little person she had just seen. There was no one there, and she immediately looked under the sofa again. No one was there. It was at this point that her elderly host returned, bearing a tray of coffee and cakes. My sister was embarrassed, and her host asked her if she had dropped something. My sister didn't know how to reply truthfully, but the elderly lady smiled and said something like,
"So have you met my little gnome?"
My sister's face must have told its own story, and the old lady said that in Scandinavian lore,
many homes had a fairy protector, and described the figure in perfect detail to my sister. To have actually seen the little creature was said to be extremely rare, and my sister was considered to be very honored because of it, according to her host. Even after the event, she still didn't believe what she'd seen, despite her host's confirmation that she had had a real experience and not imagined the whole thing. My sister was not given to flights of fancy or telling tales, so I have every reason to believe her account was a true representation of what she thought she had experienced.
That'd be an afternoon to remember.
Interesting. So,
I mean, it's just such a weird concept. I mean, if you really believe that this is possible, that there could be this hidden world next to us where there are these, especially such a specific thing of this red-hatted
little guy.
Guys that just like...
Reminds me of The Borrowers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what that was about, right? That movie?
Yeah. And little people that would live in the walls and steal things?
Yeah.
They borrow things?
They'd borrow.
Yeah.
That was their name. Well, the fact that the elderly lady says, mm-hmm. Have you seen my gnome? That yeah. She would expect that that's what the person right. was responding to. Unless she hired a little person that happened to live in the neighborhood to like dress up.
You never know.
And then run away. I mean, it's possible. But it seems like something did happen.
Yeah. Especially when you pair it with this next story here. The Hold of Folk in the Field. And this is a Swedish account. And 9 a.m. only lasted for about a minute. And this is fascinating because it's so normal in the experience.
I saw a very small man, less than half the size of a human, walk across a field in front of me. I was walking in the field. He was crossing my path. He was wearing a workman's apron over his clothes, and I think he was carrying a bag, satchel, or something like that. It looked like he was about some business rather than just taking in the scenery. Just before he was about to reach the edge of the field and pass into the woods, he disappeared into thin air. Like he was never there. Strangely, I was not at all afraid, upset, or even excited when it happened. Just matter-of-factly noted that he was there and disappeared, and that it was something out of the ordinary. I guess in Ireland he might have been called a leprechaun. In Sweden, where I live, we also speak of little people under various names. He was smaller than we are, but otherwise looked like us. I imagine ghosts would be life-size, aliens would look different, angels would make a much bigger impression, etc. He seemed to be of a supernatural little people as he disappeared into thin air.
Cool.
What are these things?
I want to see it. One on his way to work.
I think it'd be unnerving.
Probably.
To see a tiny disappearing man.
Mm-hmm. He didn't seem to have much reaction, but...
Yeah, definitely.
All right, John, this one's you. What is a red cap? We've talked about this. This is the horrifying
red cap. The concept of the red cap comes from, I believe, Scotland?
Yeah, Scotland.
Specific area where there'd been bloody battles and these little goblin-type things, also red cap.
Sound like a Nissa, kind of.
Sound like an evil Nissa.
Except they dye their hats with blood.
They dye them with blood. Yeah, we covered these guys, I think, in Terrorized by Gnomes episode.
Yeah, we'll have a link for that.
But anyways, this comes from... Zanvin. I actually found this on the Humanoid Encounters section subreddit.
Oh, yeah.
And they titled this, I Believe I Encountered a Red Cap as a Child.
This was a very early childhood memory. I can't recall my exact age at the time, but I'd estimate that I was around 5 to 7 years old. Unfortunately, I can only recount a small specific point in the story, but nonetheless, this is what happened. I was in my parents' bedroom, crying in fear, as I witnessed what appeared to be a very short, malicious-looking, fair-skinned goblin wearing a pointed red cap. It simply stood on the end of the bed, laughing maniacally at me. My mother was trying to calm me down and had no idea why I was so hysterical, since she couldn't see or hear anything. So seemingly, only I was able to see this entity. That's all I can remember, sadly. I have absolutely no recollection of what happened after that and never saw this being again.
So that laughing maniacally, that just feeding on that fear, it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's a familiar idea. But it's interesting because this goes to the concept of cross-cultural experiences of similar creatures.
Right.
Specifically the red cap or the duende we have down south. There was a response to this on the subreddit from Kemotar Vion. I spoke to this person. They are from Colombia,
And they had a couple really amazing stories in this, but this one specifically relates to today's topic, and it is about what they believe to be a duende. I'm from Colombia, and like a lot of South Americans have said before, we kind of see things down here every now and then. When I was a boy, my grandpa used to have a ranch, finca in Spanish, that had a lot of supernatural occurrences. From little lights that appeared on a small island by the river at night, fairies, if you were to believe my grandpa, all the way to a giant sighting that my grandfather used to tell us about when he was young and when things used to be dangerous in the countryside of Colombia. But what I remember the most about this place was when I saw a duende. It was roughly the same size as a cat. I was climbing a tree, and when I reached out for a branch, I kind of caught it by mistake between the branch and my hand. It stood there watching me and looked almost as afraid as I was. Then it bit my hand, and I screamed and let go. I fell. It hurt like hell. They had to put in stitches between my thumbs. It was a deep cut. I never saw it again. I still have the scar from the bite 30 years later. Now it looks like a cut, but I never forgot how it was done.
Yikes. Real attack.
Pretty freaky.
Yeah. Sounds like an angry little butt.
Yeah. Angry little butt.
Good description.
Yeah. Are the duende supposed to be generally malevolent?
I think so.
And we've had a couple of duende stories submitted in the past, I remember. Yeah. There's definitely something to these creepy little creatures.
Yeah.
I don't like it. It reminds me of the Pottywalkers. Remember those guys, John?
Yeah.
From The Gate?
I think we talked about this on the...
There's a specific scene in The Gate with Stephen Dorff where he reaches out towards the little guy, the little Pottywalker. We call them Pottywalkers because it looks like they're sitting on the toilet when they walk, like waddling. But he reaches out to grab the guy and he bites him in the hand. It just reminds me of that scene.
Yeah.
Except he's in a tree, so that would be pretty freaky.
Yeah, I don't know if it depends on where you live. I mean, it seems like in Norway, the Nisa, which sounds a lot like the Red Caps from, you know... Mm-hmm. Further southern areas, they seem nicer. Don't they just like Scandinavian people more? And there are other areas that seem a little more aggressive. And then the sharp teeth in certain areas.
I think they're just different species.
Yeah, it could be.
Some kind. But it's interesting. This person has submitted this story about the duende, that tree he's climbing.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, from what I remember reading, it's a mango tree that was given to his grandfather by, I don't know if it was like a wise woman or something who was planted, but the same tree later. He tells the story of his grandfather. Well, I won't get into it.
Oh, the giant story.
It involves a giant. And that, it's a great fascinating story. If we ever do an episode on maybe South American giants or something to that effect, there is an amazing story that this person was passed down to this person from their grandfather.
It's a great tale. Maybe we'll do it in the expansion. It's very good. I don't know if I can hold on to it.
But anyways, yeah, fascinating stories, fascinating tales, fascinating lore. We've only scratched the surface. And again, this is a topic that is so kind of hard to box in. I mean, the folklore, the beliefs, you know, we're only passing on pieces of folklore and mythology that was produced orally for so many generations and then written down by Snorri and others. But
and if you're really interested in the culture, the mind of the Viking and that whole area, there's a link we'll have in the show notes. Really excellent guy. He reminds me of the Graham Hancock of like Viking archaeology and shamanism. Brilliant guy.
Mythology.
His name's Neil Price. He's an English archaeologist who is working in Sweden at the university. But his whole thing is the Viking Age Scandinavia and the archaeology of shamanism. Really brilliant guy. And he has a great mini documentaries on an awesome YouTube channel called Grimfrost. If you're really interested in the Nordic way of life, the Vikings way of life. Really awesome videos. So we'll link those as well.
Yeah, they even interviewed that guy from that band, Valrunda, or something like that. I forget what it's called exactly.
Valrunda.
But it's a lot of the music I think that featured in the show Vikings. Really good music. It was this guy's attempt to bring the Viking sound, the sound of what Viking music might have been like, into modern day, recreating like this kind of folk music.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. I wish we could play it, but we can't because of obviously YouTube copyright and stuff. But we'll put a link in the show notes too. It's really good music. I run to it. It's very inspiring. I feel my ancestors running alongside me.
Blood pumping.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Cool. Well, John, this was your idea. Was it everything you'd hoped it'd be?
Yes, it was very interesting. Good job, Jeremy.
Thanks, John. Thank you for the idea.
Grandma and Grandpa are smiling from heaven or Valhalla.
They're like, it's all real. We're living with them.
Thor says hi. All right, guys. Well, with that, I do think we have some very special people to thank.
Yep. Sign up for the expansion at a certain tier and you will hear your name.
All right. Without further ado, thank you to Shannon Eisenhart. She puts the horse before the cart, Shannon Eisenhart. Eisenhart.
Yes.
She does it right. Gabby Damroth is here. Dogman Whisperer.
Oh, Dogmans are the best.
Gabby Damroth.
Damroth.
Oh, Shannon Eisenhart was also Dogman Whisperer. Double up those owls, ladies and gentlemen. Howl it up.
Thank you.
Yes.
Another Dogman Whisperer in the hole, Sean DeWeese.
Ooh, DeWeese. DeWeese.
Makes me Nick and the Weeze.
DeWeeze, if you please.
Nick and the Weeze. Crabbo de la Creme.
Yum.
Wow.
Welcome to the hole. Come on down.
What are these names?
I don't know. That sounds like a seafood dessert.
Come into my smorgasbord of delectable treats.
Mm. I appreciate it, though. Thank you. Brent Danger Abbott. Danger is his middle name.
Yes. Awesome.
Ooh, I'm not surprised.
Did he probably chose that right. If not, he's got great parents.
Welcome to the hole, Lacey Markle.
Yes.
Ooh, hey, Markle, Lacey Markle.
Markle, my sparkle, Darkle.
That makes no sense at all.
Doesn't have to.
Thank you to be here. Yes. Dogman Whisperer knocking at the door, Julian. Who wants to answer? Ding dong.
I'll get it. Hello, Julian. Welcome in. Tea's ready for you on the stove.
Yes.
Christopher Lemus is here. Welcome to be here, Christopher.
Christopher Lemus, I've got a...
Nope.
Handshake for you.
Thank you, Christopher, being here.
Yes, welcome to be here. Not a new Christian, but an old Jewish is here. Welcome, old Jewish, to the hole. Mazel tov.
Old Jewish, thank you for being here.
Oh, yes.
You may be old where you are, but you're new to us, and we appreciate you. I guess the loop doesn't... Oh, there it goes. This is very awkward today.
It's not tight.
Yeah. It's not tight.
Like the hole.
Maria Feliciano.
Ooh. Welcome in, Maria.
I'm sure I did not pronounce that correctly. Welcome into the hole. Man, I keep forgetting to say people are Dogman Whisperers. Old Jewish was a Dogman Whisperer. Thank you again, my friend.
We got
a brand new pack. John's having a spaz attack. You can't see John, but he is freaking out with joy right now, or with something. I don't know what it is, but he does look like he is having spasms of sorts in the background.
Beautiful spasms of joy.
Excellent.
Dodie Chungus is a Dogman Whisperer.
Dodie Chungus? Dodie Chungus is among us.
He is among us.
Welcome in. We're glad to have you with us.
He's chomping at the bit. Dogman Whisperer, welcome to be here.
Right.
Ashley Towersy.
Yes.
Welcome in, my friend.
Yes, yes.
Happy to be having you.
Towering over the hole.
That's right.
Welcome to be here. Chris Macaluso.
Yes. Ooh.
Welcome in, Chris.
Karate chop for you.
Macaluso?
I was just thinking of the actor who plays Karate Kid. That's why I said karate
Macchio?
Chop.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I see it.
Excellent.
That was strange. Michaela Offholder.
Yes.
Oh, welcome in, Michaela.
Welcome, Michaela. What a sweetheart.
We are very happy to be having you here.
This is a disaster. This is our own version of hell.
Seriously, like having to try to be good at this?
What if we had to do this for eternity, dude? Like it wouldn't loop correctly and we'd just be like, Mac us off.
What if when we die, God has us just welcome people into heaven this way? And so it's just a never-ending line of people.
It's so bad.
We're just like, Juniper Salisbury. And we're like, welcome in, Juniper.
Yeah, only 1,392,000 left for today.
1,000,000.
Welcome into the ring, Kyle Wing. Hi.
All right.
Yes, birds of a feather flock together in the hole.
Wow.
Okay.
Wingmaker.
Yes.
Misty Olson is a member of the hole now. Thank you, Black Eyed Cool Kid. Welcome in, Misty. You're making me all teary-eyed. Aw, Misty. We're Misty for you. Play Misty for me. That's a classic.
Misty.
Shauna Feeney.
Yes.
She ain't no weenie.
Shauna Feeney is my master peenie. What?
What? What?
I wanted to say masterpiece, but it didn't rhyme.
Welcome in, Sean.
You better be getting jiggy with it, because we got Big Willie in the house.
All right.
Big Willie.
Slap, slap.
That's a Will Smith thing, right?
Yes, it is. Big Willie style.
All right. That's what I thought. All right. Welcome in, Big Willie.
Everybody cover your face.
Damn it. Sean Feeney was a Dogman Whisperer. We got to find a better way to do this. Allison Bolduc.
Yes!
Welcome in, Allison. Welcome to be here.
Yes.
Sean O'Connell is in the house.
Yes.
In the hole.
Ah, that's a very Irish name.
Yes.
Are you related to Jerry?
Might be. Most likely. He's sliding on in. Sliding on in with his slider portal. And finally, today, to wrap up this very awkward round of thank yous, trying to get through, we have Sonia Begonia, who sounds like she was announced by Dad.
Sonia Begonia?
Did Dad sign up? That's just how Dad would say the name Sonia. Sonia Begonia is in the hole. Sonia, thank you so much for being in the hole with us here.
You've been read by our father.
Sonia Begonia, what a great name. Oh, thank you guys. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. Thank you, everyone who's here.
You don't know how much we love you for that. Thank you.
Really? We do.
Keeping us going. Making us strong.
We love you forever in the day.
Yes, we do. We are Belief Whole Strong because of you.
If we haven't read your name yet, you will be coming up.
Yes. All right, guys. Thanks so much again. And we'll see you in the expansion where we're going to get into the afterlife of the Norse people and explore the lands between.
Hell yeah.
Heck yeah.
See you next time
on
Belief Whole.